This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Earlier on the show, we heard from Republican Congressman Tom Cole of Oklahoma. My next guest is Democratic Congressman Rahm Emanuel. As the new chair of the Democratic Caucus, Emanuel is now the fourth highest-ranking member of the House leadership. During the 2006 elections, he was the chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and was a key figure in developing the Democratic campaign strategy. He's represented Illinois' 5th District since 2003. Emanuel has co-authored a new book called The Plan, Big Ideas for America. Rahm Emanuel, welcome to Fresh Air. What's your reaction to President Bush's speech last night and his proposal to send about 20,000 more troops to Iraq and to invest about $1 billion in additional funds thereto?
Yeah. Well, there's both a stylistic and a substantive response. On the stylistic, I thought the president looked kind of tired, drawn, and in a speech that required energy and determination, I really think he missed the mark. And on two fronts. One, I think they tried to take the Texas out of the Texan, and it kind of downed him energy-wise. And he's still 6 years into his presidency, and he can't occupy the Oval. Standing up against the wall looked strange. And so from a person who used to work in the White House, I think on a speech that should have marshaled the energy and determination of this country, it didn't hit its mark. On the substance, look, there's a lot of controversy inside the armed forces about whether this is going to work. Obviously, he's got General Petraeus who believes it can, but Casey and others in Abizaid thought that more Americans in the center of Baghdad would actually make the problem worse. This is the second attempt at increasing the size of the force to try to bring stability and let alone peace to that area. And this force that we just 7-8 months ago increased is still there, number one. Number two, on the political side, we are hoping and praying that Maliki becomes something he hasn't shown himself in the last year. So I think it sits on a weak reed.
What is a Democrat's plan to oppose sending more troops and investing more money in Iraq?
Well, I think the first thing to do and what Congress has an obligation to do is get a sense of the Congress, whether it's that sense of the Congress vote, a resolution specifically, or some type of expression on this policy. I think the president deserves that. And so my instinct is, in discussions we've had with the leadership, is to have a clear up or down vote on this present course established by the president.
You're referring to the non-binding resolution.
It could take a non-binding resolution. It can be an expression of the House. There's a different ways to do this, okay? But basically, yes, you'd get a some sense of the House of Representatives to be on record in support or not of the president's present policy of escalation.
Do you think that the Democrats should vote down an appropriations bill to fund the president's new Iraq plan?
First of all, the president even hasn't sent his funding request to the Congress. Step one, deal with the resolution. And that's not going to be the first order of business we will deal with in short time.
But I mean, an appropriations bill, that's not symbolic. You could vote it down or not. I mean,
right. Look, we're not going to get into a situation that this White House can somehow politicize and accuse people of dealing with cutting off funds. We've been clear from Nancy Pelosi to Harry Reid to Dick Durbin to Steny Hoyer. We will do nothing to harm the troops who are in harm's way. But we will be clear that if he's, determined to send more troops, that it cannot come at the expense of America's readiness around the world and here at home. And that can't happen. There are two reasons, as I understand it, and again, I'm reading in the public domain, two reasons that generals opposed this policy. One, they didn't think it was going to work. It was going to get deeper inside a sectarian conflict and only make it worse. Two, that the armed forces are already at near breaking point, and this will create further strain on the armed forces. 21 out of the 39 brigades the United States have ready brigades already in Iraq, 21 out of 39, the majority. And so any attempt to further commit our resources into Iraq cannot come at the expense of America's readiness and its armed forces and putting it such a strain that you may push both the active duty, the Guard and Reserve, not near breaking point, but at the breaking point.
What kind of role do you think Congress should have in a war like the war in Iraq?
Its role is its constitutional responsibilities. And they should have, given this administration's conduct of foreign policy, it needed adult supervision. We are now seeing the last 6 years, the consequences of 6 years of a Congress that walked away from its responsibilities. So to pick up on the tail end of that now, we are going to put those pieces together. There will be a real oversight of what the request is. There'll be a real oversight of how the money was spent, how the $1.5 billion on top of the $30 billion we spent on Reconstruction will accomplish some civil stability. So Congress will do its role of oversight. And I think we now can see the consequences in Iraq primarily of a foreign policy run without any checks and balances.
What do you think the most potent thing that Congress could do to change the course of the war? You want to change the course of the war. There's a Democratic majority in the House and Senate. What's the most potent thing you can do?
Well, first of all, let me say this. We're going to have to alter the debate and make sure that in the oversight that the questions get asked and the questions get answered as we had as our constituents have asked of us, which is, what are we trying to do, et cetera. Get that out in front, because it's way too long for, you know, look, just let's take one step and one line out of last night's speech. The president acknowledged there were too few troops. Now, how long has that been known? Like 8 books on the war in Iraq? Any editorial page or op-ed page in any paper, major or minor paper throughout the country? And yet, 3.5 years into this war and over 3,000 troops, acknowledgement that we've had too few troops to execute a policy of stability and democracy in Iraq. And that's like an earth-shattering acknowledgement, and people are treating it as, you know, freshness out of the White House. Everybody knew that except for one institution, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And to change the course of the war is to get the White House to come to terms with the consequences of the policies they pursued.
Among the Republicans who are now challenging the president's course, yeah, on the war are Senator Sam Brownback, Norm Coleman, George Voinovich,
Gordon Smith, Chuck Hagel,
mm-hmm.
So about 10 Republicans in the Senate.
Do you think that the war will turn out to be an issue in which Democrats can achieve some measure of bipartisanship? And if so, what will that mean to the Democratic strategy?
Well, our goal, I think, as Senator Levin has strongly put together, basically is to try to make the administration adopt more of the Iraq Study Group recommendations, which are diplomatic. I mean, so much of the focus here, if you look, what's the big contrast here? I don't have the specific number. Of the 90-plus or 80-plus recommendations in the Iraq Study Group, well over half of them are diplomatic. And so much of this effort of the president is military. And anybody will tell you, whether you're for or against the escalation, the solution here is a political and diplomatic one. And so this is where the Democrats are, is hoping the administration, and then more forcefully than hope, would start to see the Iraq Study Group recommendations as a way to limit our exposures and our liabilities and begin to redeploy from Iraq, given the consequences of that policy as pursued now.
You know, some Republicans say, well, you know, the Democrats talk big about how they oppose the president's plan on Iraq, but they have offered no coherent strategy, no coherent alternative of their own. Is that a fair criticism?
No. Iraq Study Group. We support that. We've been clear about supporting it. And it is a clear alternative approach. It's a surge in diplomatic effort, not a surge in military escalation. It's a totally different approach.
No.
And one we've supported when it was announced, from Nancy Pelosi to Harry Reid to Senator Biden, Senator Levin, Ike Skelton, Jack Murtha, all said there was a lot of recommendations here. In fact, I chaired a caucus inside the House that brought former Secretary of State Baker and Congressman Lee Hamilton to present the Iraq Study Group. A lot of people praised it, said it was the right approach. Again, I bring you back to a simple fact. The bulk of the recommendations there are diplomatic in nature. The core of the president's policy is military. Could not be farther. And the alternative the Democrats are talking about, and I appreciate the what just has become nomenclature, although I don't think it's very accurate, is we have seen an approach. Now, let me also say this, because I think that criticism is just empty Washington talk. Whether you agree or not, Joe Biden 16 months ago offered a serious proposal on separating the country along the sectarian lines there. Senator Levin, 2 years ago, offered a serious idea based on benchmark and conditions. Jack Murtha offered a serious idea on redeployment. And Ike Stelton offered a serious proposal. They were, at the time, all minority leaders, ranking members in either the military or the foreign policy committees. The chairman of those committees, the Republicans, Senator Lugar, Senator Warner, Duncan Hunter, never offered an idea. The one thing Democrats did do was offer very serious ideas, and the constant theme through each of those ideas was doing more of the same would get you no different result. They had different takes, but they were strategically thought through and coherent policies. Now, what has become lazy intellectualism is so Democrats don't have an alternative. In fact, what we did do is have many ideas on how to do something different and had a White House and a Congress that refused to look at and analyze different approaches to solving this problem.
How does it feel to be in the majority now? It's your first time in the majority.
an out-of-body experience.
what's the difference from your point of view?
First of all, you had Tom Cole on, who's actually a dear friend of mine. We share books and reading lists. Tom was one that persuaded me to take over the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee last process to help us win, because he says if you care about certain things, there's only one way to make that happen, and that's to have the majority. And that's why I decided in the end, even with young kids, to do it. And you can see yesterday when we won that minimum wage vote, something that we had been working on for 10 years, and it finally happened, not with a slight victory, but with over 310 votes out of 435, that things that you'd work on can now hit the board and get a lot of green lights associated with is a big deal. Stem cell, an energy bill, very practical, that moves $12 billion from oil and gas companies' bottom lines into a renewable account, which is so important for America's future. And I introduced last Congress with Marty Meehan the first ever comprehensive lobbying and ethics reform. And everybody's acknowledged what we've done is the most far-reaching reform since the Watergate era. And to see things that you cared about, campaigned on, made an issue, pledged, enacted, that's a big deal. And I'll give you one little practical, just funny thing. It's kind of gotten crowded down on the Democratic side. It's hard to maneuver around on the floor. And it's just become because there's so many people now down there. And so there's just a lot of energy and a lot of excitement by folks who want to, all of a sudden, all this pent-up capacity to want to do things is finally accomplishable. And our job in the leadership, as I always say, is to take the experience of people who've been there and the energy of the new members and marshal those two forces together to get things done.
You told the publication The Hill last summer that a sclerosis had set in among House Democrats and that part of your job was to shake up the established order. What do you hope to do to shake it up?
Well, first of all, we got a majority. That's number one. And number two was to understand, I think the more senior members bring experience. The new members bring energy. As a younger member in the leadership, my job is to help with the leadership meld both the energy of the new members and the experience of the older members so we have a united front in getting through what is our joint agenda of being of reform.
I want to change course a little bit here. Now, people say that the character of Josh Lyman, the Bradley Whitford character in The West Wing, was based on you. Is that true?
He came out and campaigned for me when I first ran for Congress. And it's based on, I think there's some characteristics based on a couple other people in the White House, but the main character would be me. Yes.
So what was it like for what was it like for you to watch the show?
Now, I have to be fair. I've told this to Mr. Sorkin and others, John Wells. I have periodically watched it, but I because I lived it for 7 years, I was not an avid watcher of West Wing, although I did watch it periodically, and it was a good show. And I thought it had a – I thought, you know, it's not – if you've been there, it's not totally accurate. On the other hand, given TV shows, it was very successful at giving the most important, the energy that comes in a White House and the sense of pressure that exists in a White House.
But you probably didn't do as many walk and talks as they do on the show.
Well,
having these major level discussions, walking through the halls.
Well, no, you'd be not that, but you do get a sense. I mean, you know what's most interesting in the White House is you have very little, not as much information as you think you're going to have, and you have to make very critical judgments. And a lot of it is both from the president on down to the staff. You have to make judgment calls with very little information, big judgment calls. But I think it has a pretty good take on the energy and the pressure of a White House.
Okay, so a character in The West Wing was based at least in part on you, and then uh-huh. People also say that the character of the high powered Hollywood agent that Jeremy Piven plays in Entourage is based on your younger brother Ari.
That's correct.
So, geez, these are two. Both of you are such like high powered.
The joke
assertive
in the family
or aggressive people. What was it like growing up like that? Two such aggressive and controlling kids.
Controlling? We were meek. Ari and I, tease my older brother, Ari's older brother as well, Ezekiel, who is the head of medical ethics at NIH, until he has a TV show, he's bringing the entire family score down. I joke, we have a unique background. My father was from Israel and recently immigrated to the country to practice medicine. My mother was very active in the civil rights movement. And dinner table was a very dynamic environment. My grandfather and mother on my mother's side lived with us at one time, as my grandmother on my father's side lived with us. So it was never quite totally just a nuclear family. And my parents gave us a lot of independence, but demanded a lot of us. And, I think it's the culture that comes, in my own view, from an immigrant culture about trying to appreciate what we have of being in this country. And on the family wall in the family room, my parents have a black and white pictures, about 10 or 12 of them, of relatives on both sides of the family who never made it to this country. And they just stared at you. And in the middle of the wall was a framed purse, little purse, pushka. And that purse is the purse that carried the papers for my grandmother and my two great aunts to come to this country. And it was my parents' reminder of us every day in the family room that we were lucky to be in this country. And so they made sure that we pursued our dreams and that we appreciated it to be in the greatest country in the world.
Yeah. For a while, you'd studied ballet, and
correct.
And you were a ballet dancer. And I wonder what it was like for you in the ballet world, which is a really different world from politics.
Yeah, although you got to be fast on your feet in both. I had a scholarship to the Joffrey Ballet School. I took it, dropped out. Started up again when I was playing soccer to improve my soccer game, then dropped soccer and stayed with ballet. At that time, it was still not kind of an accepted thing for men to do.
Right.
But I thought it was I still find ballet, and I go regularly. I find ballet, people always say, crawl, walk, run. In my view, it's always crawl, walk, run, dance. And not to get too esoteric, because you asked a different question, there is no culture in the world in which at some point both the culture or the religion that dance isn't the one form that you take to give an expression religiously as a way of saying something to a higher spirit. And I think it's a great embodiment of an expression and a way to use the body to give an expression of the human spirit.
So just one more question. You said you don't watch The West Wing because you lived
Mm-mm.
it. Do you watch Entourage?
I'll tell you a funny story. I don't watch it, but about five episodes into the show, I finally caught it when I was in a hotel when I was room when I was traveling. So I called Ari the next day. I said, Ari, I finally caught Entourage. He goes, yeah, what do you think? I said, I happen to like that guy more than I like you. No, you want to know the truth is the one show I try to catch the most often, and again, given my mine and Amy's lives, and this may be my father's a doctor, my mother was a nurse, my brother's a doctor, but does medical ethics, my sister-in-law's a doctor. I love ER. I love that show. And so that may tell you something. And I don't catch it as much as I'd like to. Now that we're in the majority, I had a better TV ratings when I was in the minority. But I love watching ER. So there. I don't know if that's reflective of anything else or the medical background. Maybe I'm just a frustrated doctor, so I became a spin doctor.
Well, Congressman Emanuel, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Congressman Rahm Emanuel is the new chair of the Democratic Caucus. He co-wrote the new book, The Plan, Big Ideas for America.